Chapter 113. Mr. Ralph Nickleby cuts an old acquaintance. It would also appear from the contents hereof that a joke, even between husband and wife, may be sometimes carried too far. There are some men who, living with the one object of enriching themselves, no matter by what means, and being perfectly conscious of the baseness and rascality of the means which they will use every day towards this end, affect nevertheless even to themselves a high tone of moral rectitude, and shake their heads and sigh over the depravity of the world. Some of the craftiest scoundrels that ever walked this earth, or rather for walking implies, at least, an erect position and the bearing of a man that ever crawled and crept through life by its dirtiest and narrowest ways, will gravely jot down in diaries the events of every day, and keep a regular debtor and creditor account with heaven, which shall always show a floating balance in their own favor. Whether this is a gratuitous, the only gratuitous, part of the falsehood and trickery of such men's lives, or whether they really hope to cheat heaven itself, and lay up treasure in the next world by the same process which has enabled them to lay up treasure in this, not to question how it is, so it is. And, doubtless, such bookkeeping, like certain autobiographies which have enlightened the world, cannot fail to prove serviceable, in the one respect of sparing the recording angel some time and labor. Ralph Nickleby was not a man of this stamp. Stern, unyielding, dogged, and impenetrable, Ralph cared for nothing in life, or beyond it, save the gratification of two passions, avarice, the first and predominant appetite of his nature, and hatred, the second. Affecting to consider himself but a type of all humanity, he was at little pains to conceal his true character from the world in general, and in his own heart he exulted over and cherished every bad design as it had birth. The only scriptural admonition that Ralph Nickleby heeded in the letter was "Know thyself." Apostrophe he knew himself well, and choosing to imagine that all mankind were cast in the same mold, hated them. For, though no man hates himself, the coldest among us having too much self-love for that, yet most men unconsciously judge the world from themselves, and it will be very generally found that those who sneer habitually at human nature, and affect to despise it, are among its worst and least pleasant samples. But the present business of these adventures is with Ralph himself, who stood regarding Newman Knox with a heavy frown, while that worthy took off his fingerless gloves, and spreading them carefully on the palm of his left hand, and flattening them with his right, to take the creases out, proceeded to roll them up with an absent air, as if he were utterly regardless of all things else, in the deep interest of the ceremonial. "Gone out of town." "Apostrophe, apostrophe," said Ralph, slowly. "A mistake of yours. Go back again." "Apostrophe, no mistake, apostrophe," returned Newman. "Not even going, gone." "Apostrophe, has he turned girl or baby?" "Apostrophe, apostrophe," muttered Ralph, with a fretful gesture. "I don't know, apostrophe," said Newman, "but he's gone." Apostrophe, the repetition of the word gone seemed to afford Newman Knox inexpressible delight, in proportion as it annoyed Ralph Nickleby. He uttered the word with a full round emphasis, dwelling upon it as long as he decently could, and when he could hold out no longer without attracting observation, stood gasping it to himself, as if even that were a satisfaction. "And where has he gone?" "Apostrophe, apostrophe," said Ralph. "France, apostrophe," replied Newman. "Danger of another attack of erysipelas, a worse attack in the head. So the doctors ordered him off. And he's gone." "Apostrophe, and Lord Frederick?" "Apostrophe, apostrophe," began Ralph. "He's gone too, apostrophe," replied Newman. "And he carries his drubbing with him, does he?" "Apostrophe, apostrophe," said Ralph, turning away, "pockets his bruises, and sneaks off without the retaliation of a word, or seeking the smallest reparation." "Apostrophe, apostrophe, he's too ill, apostrophe," said Newman. "Too ill?" "Apostrophe, apostrophe," repeated Ralph. "Why, I would have it, if I were dying, In that case I should only be the more determined to have it, and that without delay I mean, if I were he. But he's too ill. Poor Sir Mulberry. Too ill. Apostrophe, uttering these words with supreme contempt and great irritation of manner, Ralph signed hastily to Newman to leave the room, and throwing himself into his chair, beat his foot impatiently upon the ground. There is some spell about that boy, apostrophe said Ralph, grinding his teeth. Circumstances conspire to help him. Talk of fortune's favors. What is even money to such devil's luck as this? Apostrophe, he thrust his hands impatiently into his pockets, but notwithstanding his previous reflection there was some consolation there, for his face relaxed a little, and although there was still a deep frown upon the contracted brow, it was one of calculation, and not of disappointment. This hawk will come back, however, apostrophe muttered Ralph. And if I know the man, and I should by this time, his wrath will have lost nothing of its violence in the meanwhile. Obliged to live in retirement, the monotony of a sick room to a man of his habits, no life, no drink, no play, nothing that he likes and lives by. He is not likely to forget his obligations to the cause of all this. Few men would. But he of all others? No, no. Apostrophe, he smiled and shook his head, and resting his chin upon his hand, fell a musing, and smiled again. After a time he rose and rang the bell. That Mr. Squeers, has he been here? Apostrophe, said Ralph. He was here last night. I left him here when I went home, apostrophe returned Newman. I know that, fool, do I not? Apostrophe, said Ralph, irascibly. Has he been here since? Was he here this morning? Apostrophe, no, apostrophe, bawled Newman, in a very loud key. If he comes, while I am out he is pretty sure to be here by 9 tonight, let him wait. And if there's another man with him, as there will be perhaps, apostrophe said Ralph, checking himself, let him wait too. Apostrophe, let them both wait? Apostrophe said Newman. Apostrophe replied Ralph, turning upon him with an angry look. Help me on with this Spencer, and don't repeat after me, like a croaking parrot. Apostrophe, I wish I was a parrot, apostrophe Newman, sulkily. I wish you were, apostrophe rejoined Ralph, drawing his Spencer on. I'd have wrung your neck long ago. Apostrophe, Newman returned no answer to this compliment, but looked over Ralph's shoulder for an instant. He was adjusting the collar of the Spencer behind, just then, as if he were strongly disposed to tweak him by the nose. Meeting Ralph's eye, however, he suddenly recalled his wandering fingers, and rubbed his own red nose with a vehemence quite astonishing. Bestowing no further notice upon his eccentric follower than a threatening look, and an admonition to be careful and make no mistake, Ralph took his hat and gloves, and walked out. He appeared to have a very extraordinary and miscellaneous connection, and very odd calls he made, some at great rich houses, and some at small poor ones, but all upon one subject. Money. His face was a talisman to the porters and servants of his more dashing clients, and procured him ready admission, though he trudged on foot, and others, who were denied, rattled to the door in carriages. Here he was all softness and cringing civility, his step so light that it scarcely produced a sound upon the thick carpets, his voice so soft that it was not audible beyond the person to whom it was addressed. But in the poorer habitations Ralph was another man. His boots creaked upon the passage floor as he walked boldly in. His voice was harsh and loud as he demanded the money that was overdue. His threats were coarse and angry. With another class of customers, Ralph was again another man. These were attorneys of more than doubtful reputation, who helped him to new business, or raised fresh profits upon old. With them Ralph was familiar and jocose, humorous upon the topics of the day, and especially pleasant upon bankruptcies and pecuniary difficulties that made good for trade. In short, it would have been difficult to have recognized the same man under these various aspects, but for the bulky leather case full of bills and notes which he drew from his pocket at every house, and the constant repetition of the same complaint, varied only in tone and style of delivery, that the world thought him rich, and that perhaps he might be if he had his own. But there was no getting money in, when it was once out, either principal or interest, and it was a hard matter to live, even to live from day to day. It was evening before a long round of such visits, interrupted only by a scanty dinner at an eating house, terminated at Pimlico, and Ralph walked along St. James Park, on his way home. There were some deep schemes in his head, as the puckered brow and firmly set mouth would have abundantly testified, even if they had been unaccompanied by a complete indifference to, or unconsciousness of, the objects about him. So complete was his abstraction, however, that Ralph, usually as quick-sighted as any man, did not observe that he was followed by a shambling figure, which at one time stole behind him with noiseless footsteps, at another crept a few paces before him, and at another glided along by his side, at all times regarding him with an eye so keen, and a look so eager and attentive, that it was more like the expression of an intrusive face in some powerful picture or strongly marked dream, than the scrutiny even of a most interested and anxious observer. The sky had been lowering, and dark for some time, and the commencement of a violent storm of rain drove Ralph for shelter to a tree. He was leaning against it with folded arms, still buried in thought, when, happening to raise his eyes, he suddenly met those of a man who, creeping round the trunk, peered into his face with a searching look. There was something in the usurer's expression at the moment, which the man appeared to remember well, for it decided him, and stepping close up to Ralph, he pronounced his name. Astonished for the moment, Ralph fell back a couple of paces, and surveyed him from head to foot. A spare, dark, withered man, of about his own age, with a stooping body, and a very sinister face rendered more ill-favored by hollow and hungry cheeks, deeply sunburnt, and thick black eyebrows, blacker in contrast with the perfect whiteness of his hair, roughly clothed in shabby garments, of a strange and uncouth make, and having about him an indefinable manner of depression and degradation. This, for a moment, was all he saw. But he looked again, and the face and person seemed gradually to grow less strange, to change as he looked, to subside and soften into lineaments that were familiar, until at last they resolved themselves, as if by some strange optical illusion, into those of one whom he had known for many years, and forgotten and lost sight of for nearly as many more. The man saw that the recognition was mutual, and beckoning to Ralph, to take his former place under the tree, and not to stand in the falling rain, of which, in his first surprise, he had been quite regardless, addressed him in a hoarse, faint tone. "You would hardly have known me from my voice, I suppose, Mr. Nickleby?" " he said. "No," returned Ralph, bending a severe look upon him. "Though there is something in that, that I remember now. There is little in me that you can call to mind as having been there 8 years ago, I dare say?" observed the other. "Quite enough," said Ralph, carelessly, and averting his face. "More than enough. If I had remained in doubt about you, Mr. Nickleby," said the other, "this reception, and your manner, would have decided me very soon. Did you expect any other?" asked Ralph, sharply. "No," said the man. "You were right," retorted Ralph, "and as you feel no surprise, need express none." "Mr. Nickleby," said the man, bluntly, after a brief pause, during which he had seemed to struggle with an inclination to answer him by some reproach, "will you hear a few words that I have to say? I am obliged to wait here till the rain holds a little," said Ralph, looking abroad. If you talk, sir, I shall not put my fingers in my ears, though your talking may have as much effect as if I did. Apostrophe, I was once in your confidence. Apostrophe, thus his companion began. Ralph looked round and smiled involuntarily. Well, apostrophe, said the other, as much in your confidence as you ever chose to let anybody be. Apostrophe, ah. Apostrophe, apostrophe, rejoined Ralph, folding his arms. That's another thing, quite another thing. Apostrophe, don't let us play upon words, Mr. Nickleby, in the name of humanity. Apostrophe, of what? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Ralph. Of humanity, apostrophe, replied the other, sternly. I am hungry and in want. If the change that you must see in me after so long an absence must see, for I, upon whom it has come by slow and hard degrees, see it and know it well, will not move you to pity, let the knowledge that bread, not the daily bread of the Lord's Prayer, which, as it is offered up in cities like this, is understood to include half the luxuries of the world for the rich, and just as much coarse food as will support life for the poor, not that, but bread, a crust of dry hard bread, is beyond my reach today. Let that have some weight with you, if nothing else has. Apostrophe, if this is the usual form in which you beg, sir, apostrophe, said Ralph, you have studied your part well, but if you will take advice from one who knows something of the world and its ways, I should recommend a lower tone, a little lower tone, or you stand a fair chance of being starved in good earnest. Apostrophe, as he said this, Ralph clenched his left wrist tightly with his right hand, and inclining his head a little on one side, and dropping his chin upon his breast, looked at him whom he addressed with a frowning, sullen face. The very picture of a man whom nothing could move or soften. Yesterday was my first day in London, apostrophe, said the old man, glancing at his travel-stained dress and worn shoes. It would have been better for you, I think, if it had been your last also, apostrophe, replied Ralph. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.